So North Korea has sentenced two U.S. reporters to 12 years in a forced labor camp. North Korea detained the two journalists, Laura Ling and Una Lee, in March, accusing them of crossing the border illegally and conducting undefined hostile acts. This sentence comes as there are more signs that North Korea is planning to test a longer-range missile, and the Obama administration has indicated this weekend that it is seeking a way to interdict, possibly with China's help, North Korean sea and air shipments suspected of carrying weapons or nuclear technology. Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking over the weekend.
Obviously, we're working closely with our team in New York. We think we're going to come out of this with a very strong resolution, with teeth that will have consequences for the North Korean regime.
What can the Obama administration or the United Nations, for that matter, as the Secretary of State was referring to there, do about North Korea? It's a challenge for diplomats and also for people who watch the news, sorting out the difference between an international crisis and something of a diplomatic chess game. To help us with all of that is David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. David, good morning.
Good morning.
I mean, we could probably have this same conversation last week when we talked extensively about North Korea, but I'm wondering how this sentencing of two U.S. reporters changes the situation, if at all.
Well, you know, you have to hope, John, that they sentenced the two reporters as a prelude to throwing them out of the country. You'll remember the Iranians did that last month with an American reporter who they had sentenced, and they went on for a few days and then expelled her from the country. One never knows, though, if the North Koreans have as refined a sense of their own self-interest here, or whether they might want to use the two reporters as a bargaining chip. Secretary Clinton, in that interview that you referred to, said they really wanted to deal with this separately as a humanitarian issue and not mix it up with the nuclear issue. And I think that's probably the right approach.
But the question is, will the North Koreans allow them to separate these issues out? You recall on this program yesterday that diplomats assumed that there would be some test of the Obama administration in the early going, that you would see a ratcheting up of rhetoric and possibly nuclear ambitions, possibly missile tests, that sort of thing. But with the sentencing of these reporters, it appears that a lot is going on simultaneously here. It puts it in really another category than simply a test of a new administration, don't you think?
It sure does. And, you know, it's all wrapped up in the one other piece of news out of North Korea in the past week, which was that the it now appears that Kim Jong-il, the very ill dictator of the country, has designated his youngest son, Kim Jong-un, as the likely successor. And Kim Jong-un is the 26-year-old who was trained in Switzerland. The CIA gave him the moniker the cute leader because of how he appeared in photos they have hanging up on their desks out there. But the fact of the matter is there's likely a power struggle underway because the military is not so keen on the idea of creating yet a third member of the Kim dynasty. And so all of these events may really be wrapped up in this power struggle.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the rhetoric here. Even though, you know, we're talking about nukes and the sentencing of two young women to 12 years in a forced labor camp, in all cases, it seems as though everyone expects that this is a set of bargaining chips, that this is much more of a chess game than it is some sort of, you know, saber-rattling with unstable consequences. There's all kinds of precedents that when the Koreans sort of, or the North Koreans step up the rhetoric, they also back down very, very slowly as long as there are quid pro quos coming their way. What is it that the administration can either do to sanction North Korea at this point or offer them in the form of a carrot to make them come down here?
You know, what I think is the most interesting thing out of this, John, is that in the interviews I've done with members of the administration in the past week, it's become clear that they don't want to offer the kind of carrots that President Bush and before him President Clinton did, because they see the pattern here. The North Koreans create a crisis, then they go and resell you something that they sold the past administration or the administration before that. In those two cases, they sold them the freezing or dismantling of Yongbyon, the major nuclear power plant and reprocessing center where they make their nuclear fuel. And it was very interesting, I thought, last week when the Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, said, you know, I don't want to buy that horse again. We've already bought it twice. And so now the administration faces this issue. They want to go to the North Koreans and say, look, you've already agreed to dismantle this stuff. You've already been told by the UN that you can't shoot off any more missiles. We're not going to pay you to do that again. And that means that the only way you could really enforce it is to put the squeeze on them. And that's what the administration is talking about doing with these interdictions at sea and, of course, with financial squeezes as well.
Well, if, as you say, that the Obama policy looks like calling the regime in Pyongyang's bluff on a variety of issues here, the families of Laura Ling and Una Lee probably aren't feeling too comfortable this morning in that they could be caught in this for quite a while.
Absolutely. And, you know, remember when the Pueblo was taken, the American ship that was seized by North Korea
during the Ford administration,
1960s, right? It was more than a year before everybody got released.
It was more than a year.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Finally, there is an issue of this interdiction. And at the same time, the North Koreans are trying to indicate that, areas of the sea off their coastline are quarantined in preparation for a missile test. How much of this battle is taking place on the water?
Well, there may be. So far, none has been. In the 2006 UN resolutions after the North's first nuclear test, there was permission given under international law for interdiction of North Korean ships suspected of carrying missiles or nuclear technology. That was never enforced. Right now, the Obama administration faces two ways that you could inspect these ships. One is get the Chinese to do it in their own ports. You know, suddenly they declare a customs inspection because there might be fruit flies, right? And then in the course of that, go in and look at the cargo on the ships. The riskier method is the Cuban Missile Crisis method. It's to stop and board North Korean ships at sea. The risk there, of course, is that the North could, you know, open fire. Then, you know, the U.S. responds.
Oh, and it's not an island like Cuba. You know,
it sure is.
Serious tactical problems. You know, I misspoke when I talked about the Pueblo. That was 1968, as you mentioned, in the 60s. I mean, let's just look at that for a moment. I mean, the 1953 armistice that ended the Korean War has ostensibly been torn up by the regime in Pyongyang. Are we going to possibly see the revisiting of that history in 1968 when, as you say, the crew of the Pueblo was held for more than a year?
You could see some kind of significant confrontations on the water. I don't think they would last very long because the North Korean Navy ain't much. The risk here, of course, is the escalation risk, that you get into one of these confrontations and the North Koreans, in the midst of this power struggle, don't want to appear to be weak in front of the United States.
So they fire something off.
And they fire something off, and then things escalate. And, you know, wars have started over less.
That's for sure.
And so that's the Obama administration's concern here. This is why they'd love the Chinese to go inspect these ships in their ports under national laws, rather than take this kind of bigger risk.
Finally, in your discussions with Obama administration officials, where do they see the greater danger in just stepping back and ignoring North Korea and just saying, we're not going to pay any attention to you anymore, or staying focused on North Korea and running the risk of escalation?
Well, you know, they started with the ignore strategy, and it didn't work. The North Koreans threw the kind of tantrums that you're accustomed to them throwing here. Look, with North Korea, John, I've never been that concerned, and I don't think many in the Obama administration are that concerned, that they're going to lob a nuclear missile at Japan or South Korea or our troops somewhere around there. They're not going to do anything with a return address that would give somebody an excuse to go attack their capital. Instead, the big risk with North Korea has always been a proliferation risk. Remember that reactor that the Israelis blew up in Syria 2 years ago? It was a North Korean-built reactor. You know, the risk here is that they will sell a weapon system or nuclear technology because they have sold everything they've ever made.
So I guess the takeaway here is, does the administration have the capacity to put into practice tools and tactics that will reduce the risk of that proliferation? I mean, I guess that's what the interdiction policy is all about. David Sanger, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times, talking about North Korea. He's the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts, and The Challenges to American Power. He joined us from Washington.